virtually, and hope that you had a have you had a good week this week. We are a non-denominational congregation that non-denominational congregation. That's a mouthful. We meet in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Normally Sunday nights we meet in person at Parkway Heights Methodist Church. We utilize their space. They've been gracious hosts to us. But since the whole pandemic thing has started, we have been doing this. And so I know some of you have started joining us since this happened. You've never even been to an in-person service. And know that we are glad that you're tuning in. Hope that we'll get a chance to meet you in person one day, and that you can be a part of the community on that level. But know that we're just glad to have people listening in and still contributing and being a part of things. And if you want to know more about some small group opportunities we have right now, where you can connect to people on a more personal level, of course, through Zoom for the time being, and just get connected to folks from within the congregation, just let us know. And we'd be happy to get you connected to that. You can type it in like the chat box or whatever on your screen or on YouTube or wherever you're watching. So just, you know, shoot us a message through there, and hopefully we'll get a chance to let you meet some of the other folks instead of just watching me yak from week to week. So this week we are continuing on in the Gospel of Matthew. We're back on the lectionary track with a parable that is both beautiful and dangerous, and it's just a great, great parable. And we could spend a lot of time on it, but I want to kind of just hone in on a little something, and we'll try to make it succinct here. But I really do love this parable, although there are parts of it that I've heard weaponized before that bother me in the way it's been used at times, but I think it really is something worth considering. So we're in Matthew chapter 18. Verses 23 through 35. And so you can obviously open up your Bible, open up a window with the Bible app on it or something, or just listen and I'll read through it. And then we'll talk a little bit about this parable. And it says this, Matthew 18, 23 through 35. For this reason, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his slaves. When he began the reckoning, one who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. And as he could not pay, his Lord ordered him to be sold together with his wife and children and all his possessions and payment to be made. So the slave fell on his knees before him, saying, "Have patience with me. I will pay you everything." We'll get into how much money we're talking about here, but just, you know, that part right there is a lie. There's no way he's paying all this back. "I will pay you everything." Verse 27. "And out of pity for him, the Lord of that slave released him and forgave him the debt." Verse 28, "But that same slave, as he went out, came on one of his fellow slaves who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him by the throat, he said, 'Pay me what you owe.' Then this fellow slave fell down and pleaded with him, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you.' But he refused. Then he went and threw him into prison until he could pay the debt. When his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to the Lord all that had taken place. Then the Lord summoned him and said to him, 'You wicked slave, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. Should you not have had mercy on your fellow slave as I had mercy on you?' And in anger, his Lord handed him over to be tortured until he would pay his entire debt. So my heavenly Father will also do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother or sister from your heart." Heavy ending there, right? And this is a really, a parable that has this really beautiful image of forgiveness and just a gratuitous forgiveness, but also has this very heavy-handed ending to it, right? And it is beautiful and it is dangerous. And it has in the past, as really a lot of passages about forgiveness, if we're not careful, it can be weaponized a little bit. And so I do want to kind of just address that at first before we really get into it. Because these kind of verses about gratuitous forgiveness can sometimes be manipulated by people who would benefit from it as like this appeal or this contractual obligation on behalf of everyone else to not keep someone accountable who has injured others, right? This especially happens under religious veil. So if someone's been psychologically, spiritually, emotionally, maybe physically or otherwise abused by someone who is a very quote-unquote religious person, a lot of times it is then kind of put back on the victim, you know, oh, you got to forgive, right? And suddenly this person's sins are now this person's sins because they're not living up to their end of the forgiveness bargain, right? Without there ever being any kind of accountability there. And while I do believe this passage is meant to help us imagine a new world, a better world, I want to just go ahead and say off the bat that we should be careful about the way we handle forgiveness in that sense, right? In the sense of making it even harder for those who are already struggling, right? Some of you who are watching this right now might be dealing with very deep wounds on the behalf, at the hands of someone else. And any teachings on forgiveness can pretty easily be used to add weight to you and to add weight to that those who have been injured or who have been wronged and who are already struggling, right? And I'll go ahead and say this off the bat. I am going to talk about gratuitous forgiveness and what it means to live in a world of grace today. But if at any point, if you are in a place in your life of being wounded or being hurt to such a degree that this talk begins to feel like it's adding weight instead of relieving it, if this talk begins to feel like it is putting something on you that just can't be put on you yet, you can't handle it yet, or any of those kind of things, you're not at that place, it's okay to just turn this off. It's okay to leave it and maybe regather, come back later, or just skip this week if you need to. I understand. This can be a very heavy topic and can be have some pretty big manifestations in people's lives. So I do want to give you that permission as if you needed it. Because I do believe there is one thing for sure. This is a story about grace. This is a story about forgiveness, even incalculable, gratuitous forgiveness. And the point of this kind of miraculous idea is not to make your load heavier. In fact, that's quite the opposite of the point of forgiveness. So don't allow anything I'm saying to be interpreted that way, even if other people have tried to put that on you before. Does that make sense? So let's think about this parable, this parable of this person who, the slave who owes his Lord more than he can ever possibly pay back, right? And then won't forgive his fellow slave a much smaller amount. And just to give you an idea, and we kind of lose it because we don't understand what these denominations mean in regards to like how much money and talents and all this stuff, right? Denarii and talents. But this text is very hyperbolic. In other words, when Jesus would have told this story first, it would have been absurd numbers. I mean, it would have kind of taken it out of the realm of any kind of real thing that could have happened. It wouldn't even have made sense. Just to give you a little glimpse of that. So the amount that was owed by the original slave who was forgiven by his Lord, who was going to sell off his kids and his family and do everything to collect the debt, what would it mean is that slave would owe 60 million denarii, okay? A denarii is about one day's worth of work. That's a pay for one day's worth of work. So that would mean that somehow this slave had borrowed 600 million days worth of work, that kind of capital from his Lord, and then, surprise, surprise, couldn't pay it back. It opens a world of questions. What did he do with it? How did he get that much from someone? If you were a common laborer or a common servant back then, what would you even do with 60 million days worth of pay at once, right? And how can you just be tapped out? It doesn't make any sense. And the amount that then that slave finds another slave and says, puts his hands around his throat and says, pay it back, that's about 100 denarii, right? So that's about 100 days work. Now that's no small amount. For the average person hearing this story, if they're not a person of means, 100 denarii is significant. You can understand why someone would be mad if that didn't get paid back. But next to the 60 million days, it's not much, right? There's not much here. So there's intended to be this exaggeration, right? There's intended to be this kind of a beyond calculation kind of amount going on here, right? And because it is that kind of absurd number, I don't think this is meant to be a kind of story that we get real into the details about and really try and figure out what each thing means and how is it representative of what. I mean, let's get up and take a 10,000 foot view of this, right? It's not intended to be picked apart and taken too literally. It's trying to convey a larger point. And I think it's intended to warn us about the deficiencies of the world that we create, a world that's kind of a little bit narcissistic and built on scorekeeping. This world that we've built that has always got us kind of leveling out and comparing ourselves with others and feeling like we're owed something by others and all of these kind of things, this world of scorekeeping. And I think it's meant to open us up to this new world, this good news of the economy of grace, right? For I think this parable demonstrates something that we'll end with tonight, which is we can keep score or we can keep grace, but we can't keep both, right? We can keep score or we can keep grace, but we can't keep both. And when we look at this unmerciful servant and think about the 60 million that's forgiven, 60 million days worth of work that's forgiven and all this, and then how he acts, I mean, the actions don't add up, right? We can see that he's acting hypocritically. We can judge him from a distance and say, how could anyone do that? We can see him building his own prison throughout the story. How would you do that, right? But I think what this story should compel us to think about is, how could it have been? What is a proper response to a world of grace? What is a proper response to the idea that all that I have, all the servant has, is now a result of the kindness and generosity and grace of his Lord? And what would it be like to live in light of that grace that he was offered and given freely, right? I mean, maybe the question is, do you live in a world of grace? Do you live in a gracious kind of kingdom? Is your life ordered by it? What would it look like if it was? How much different would it be? Right, to live in a world of grace is to have your lens, I think, fundamentally shifted. You see everything through a whole different lens in a whole different way. It colors everything we see and do and say. It is to walk the street really knowing that you've already won the cosmic lottery just by being here, right? That you've been given this moment and these breaths and the life and the relationships and the things that we've been given. All of this is a miracle, right? It's all a gift. That is this lens of walking around in grace, that every good gift has come from the hand of God, right? It is to relate to each other with that in mind. It is to relate to each other with no need anymore to keep score because the scoreboard already got destroyed, right? It's all a gift. None of it is warranted. None of it is guaranteed. What is it like to walk in that world, to swim in that water? All right. And if we really do come from that place, and maybe you can think of someone right now, that person that you know, the way they operate, the way they live, the way they treat other people, the way they approach their own problems and their own burdens and everything else, they are grace people. They're people who live in the world of grace. Right? And there's no greater evidence of the fact that someone lives in that space and in that swims in that water than the forgiveness and grace they extend to others, even, and I guess especially by the nature of definition, those who don't deserve it, right? Because the problem with the servant is this story, that although his ledger is cleared, he never really accepts forgiveness as the truth. He never really accepts grace as the way things work. I imagine he was very happy to have his ledger removed. He was very happy to get to walk free when he thought he was going to have everything he loved taken away from him. But he still doesn't believe in forgiveness. Though everything around him bore witness to it, he still lived as a man who was carrying the burden of being owed, who was carrying the burden of a ledger that he should have seen has destroyed. he walked around still believing he was somehow more deserving of kindness than his neighbor, that he deserved to have his forgiveness while no one else deserved to have theirs, right? And this kind of mindset will always, always, and as it does in this parable, always put us back in prison, right? It's been said that forgiveness is the poison we take hoping someone else, unforgiveness is the poison we take hoping someone else will die, right? Unforgiveness is the poison we take hoping someone else will die. And in a sense, in a very real sense, I think this parable is telling us that we can't be forgiven in a very real sense if we don't forgive. Not because God isn't willing, not because God doesn't want it, not because God doesn't offer it. Because forgiveness is not something we just get to take a la carte for ourselves and then forget about. Forgiveness either is the truth of things or it is not. We have to either live in that truth and all that that means, or we don't. This kingdom of grace, this way of approaching God and being in relationship to God and to others, is not just about having the ledger cleared. It's about becoming something else, right? To borrow some language from Dallas Willard, forgiveness is not does not seek to change the barcode. It seeks to change the product. In other words, it's not just that we ring up as something different on the great ledger sheet in the sky. It is that we become a new creation. We change in our very nature. God is creating a world bathed in, rooted in grace and generosity. And the question just remains for us is, will we be citizens of that kingdom or not? Will we live in the world of grace? Can we be so transformed by the utter absurdity of the kind of grace that's talked about in this parable? Can we be so transformed by the absurdity of that grace, by the absurdity of the grace that even this moment right now holds, that we walk through this new kingdom with the insistence that every brother or sister we meet experiences what we are experiencing, also has that good news in them, around them, supporting them, sustaining them? And again, I know the end of this parable is often used as a weapon. Do this or else. Tortured until you can pay back every penny. And as I would have said in my church, you can never pay back every penny. So it's just eternity of torture, right? I think we're missing the point if that's where we camp in this story. Because the truth is, if you are not living in a world of grace right now, even if you on some level have said, hey, God forgive me, you've accepted that premise, but you have not really truly believed in forgiveness yet, truth is you're already tortured in a graceless place. And we all know what that's like. We've all been there. Truth is that most of us on a day-to-day basis spend some time there probably every day. What we don't know is that we already have the key to get out. This absurd grace, this incalculable forgiveness is made available to all of us. We just have to accept it as the reality. And I know our world doesn't believe in this. I can't remember a less gracious time than the time we're living in right now. That's the way the kingdoms of this world work, even the best of them. But will we live in the kingdom of God, the place where grace, where forgiveness, where mercy is the truth? Because at the end of the day, again, we can keep score and we can keep grace, but we can't keep both. May we be grace keepers instead of scorekeepers, right? May we live without the burden of comparison and contrast, without the burden of feeling like we are owed something by everyone we come across, without the burden of feeling like we can't overcome the debts we've incurred. May we experience the freedom of the grace and forgiveness that God offers each of us. Each of us, no matter who you are, no matter where you come from, no matter what's gone on in your life, you are forgiven. Can we accept that forgiveness really is the truth? All right, let's end there. Thank you for joining us. If you want to jump on the Zoom call after this, we'll be doing that again this week. We took a week off last week. Thank you for being here. Hopefully we'll see you in person sometime soon. Peace be with you.